is the 1UP Network. Welcome to the 1UP Years podcast for Friday, August the 4th. The show where we're going to pour one out for E3, like in memory of bygone days, huh? We're going to miss her, or we'll miss whatever it was and is in the future. Is that better? You happy now?
Yeah, that's good. 2.0 was much better than the dry run we just had.
Yeah, Luke was giving me a hassle a minute ago because he didn't really like the intro we led to the show, but
you
do have a great...
You said ceremonially.
So, ceremonially,
so now we're making fun of something that no one can hear.
I know, it's awesome. It's fantastic, isn't it?
It's so fucking meta.
So, but the bottom line is we do have a great show, as I was trying to say 5 minutes ago, because not only do we have all the E3 stuff, we have the What You Been Playing segment, not What You Gonna Be Playing or anything, whatever the hell it was I messed up last time. We really need the bloopers show, Skip. Are we going to do a bloopers show one day?
Yes.
We totally need to do the bloopers show. Anyway, we got that. We got reader mail. You guys did an awesome job answering the question about who's to blame for games. Beige took it to like a whole new level of philosophical discussion, which we'll talk about in a minute. In the second segment, we have to get on to the E3 subject. What's it been? What do we enjoy about it? Say goodbye to it, and then talk about maybe what takes over in the future, where it goes after that. And then in the news segment, we've got all kinds of stuff about Wii, PS3, Atari, whole plethora of stuff from Luke. So let's get rolling, guys. What do you think?
Okay.
Who's here?
Let's do that.
Who's here? The normal foursome, of course, the Fantastic Four. Say hey.
Hello. This is John.
I think you're Invisible Girl, Shane. I'm Human Torch. No recalls.
Can I be the Thing?
Mm-mm. Garnet's Thing.
So does that mean I'm the stretchy guy?
Of course. He's the leader.
I'm calling Galactus.
I'm fine with that.
No.
I can be Galactus if I want.
What are you playing?
I'm sticking with Hannibal.
I didn't even get to introduce myself.
Oh, that's special guest star appearing by courtesy of...
Jennifer.
Yeah, this is Shane from EGM. So what am I playing?
Yeah.
I'm still playing Xenosaga 3. And remember, last week I may have implied that I was bored by Xenosaga 3 because I fell asleep.
I don't think you implied.
Well, there wasn't much implication there.
I can't say anything, like reviewy, but I'm going to see it through to the end. Oh. Like, this is not reviewy, but it does actually start to answer all the questions that this, 90-hour franchise has been, posing. And this is the last game, so, yeah.
You think it's going to reach some kind of conclusion?
Stuff's going down. I came to it, the other night, I was like, that character is Jesus. And then I realized that, I'm like, it all makes sense.
Whoa. So it's like Xenogears then. That had a bit of a Jesus thing going on,
didn't
it?
Yeah, Xenogears was kind of like a dry run for Xenosaga. Like, yeah. Some of the same themes, some of the same art and stuff, but they aren't exactly related. They kind of are.
Love Xenogears.
I do too.
I wouldn't necessarily say you should play all three Xenosagas, and it would take me like an hour and a half to explain it to you. Mm. But maybe one day if we're really drunk, I'll explain it.
Maybe on EGM Live.
Maybe.
At egmlive.1up.com.
Oh, nice pitch.
Would that make that podcast more interesting?
Oh, actually, this week's has Sean Baby on it, and he's very nice.
What the hell is up with that?
Garnett, you haven't listened to this week's me and Sean Baby are on there, and it's Randy.
Probably because I haven't listened to any of them.
Randy?
It is Randy.
Oh, wow.
Boy, Garnett Lee.
Do you mean that the way that our English listeners will take it?
Oh, yeah.
You guys get a bit sexual?
It's a little risque.
Ooh.
Yeah.
They
I would
make
listen
out.
To Sean Baby. I mean, I would listen to it for that.
Good save, dude.
Yeah.
Fucking nice. I throw him a plug, and you fucking plug it right up with something.
What else have I been playing? I'm also playing... today I played Snoopy and the Red Baron.
Really?
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
What platform?
I played on the PlayStation 2 computer entertainment system. I also played Bounty Hounds, which is I hadn't seen in a year. Like, maybe a year and a half. I thought maybe it was canceled. Like, and it still exists. It's coming out in, September, and it's totally different now. And
what exactly is that? Bounty Hounds?
It's a PSP game from Namco, and it used to look kind of like Dead to Rights, and now it's basically like Monster Hunter.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just am envisioning, Boba Fett as a Labrador Retriever. That's all I think about.
Wow.
Wow.
Did I just blow your mind?
You just blew collective minds, I think.
Garnet!
If they can do the Lego version, maybe they could do the puppy
version. The Lego
version,
I was watching Scooter on OPM play earlier on, and the most surreal moment was he was running around as Chewbacca wearing a Stormtrooper helmet, and he walked into a bathroom where three Stormtroopers were in a jacuzzi wearing nothing but Speedos and their Stormtrooper helmets.
Wow.
Wow.
That's...
Deleted scene. It's coming out in a couple weeks. The new DVDs. Mid-September.
That's kind of scary almost.
Apparently it's full of weird little quirky stuff. If you sort of walk down a corridor and you go into the rooms off on the side, there's all this weird stuff going on apparently.
That's kind of strange.
Yeah, I think they realized that like a big percentage of the people who bought it were adults, not just like little kids who the game's kind of aimed at. So they put all that stuff in.
Second one, but, hey, it looks really fun.
Which is why they have that whole unlock thing where as you get character. Did you understand the unlock system?
You mean to get characters from the first game and the second game?
That? Right, and then apparently you can take individual pieces and like Lego them together to create like, you know, you could put Darth Vader's head on top of Luke's body with Lando's cape and.
I'm still boycotting because Jar Jar, once again, has no attack. You can play as Jar Jar, but he can't attack.
Are you kidding me? It's almost like you just started to defend that character.
We're not going to get into that now.
Shane has a long history of defending Jar Jar.
And other stupid shit.
Shane, you know what? You're going to laugh, but Shane, this is like the second time today. Jar Jar.
You know,
what are you two doing? They just did the respect fist thing.
Well, Jar Jar is
C-3PO.
It's amazing that you two have come together over something so stupid.
Well, you know, actually,
because he's freaking hilarious.
He is. He brings like a vaudevillian kind of
absolutely.
You know, comic relief.
Boy.
And this is the part where everyone stops listening.
Well, I'm glad that you feel both of you that you know you have peaked in terms of your career.
Have you never noticed the singing?
Skip Fister, managing editor.
Nope. John, you obviously
by the way, Skip, you're going to love it. You're going
to
love
John,
it.
John, you've never been to my desk. Obviously, I have a singing and dancing Jar Jar.
I have seen that, but I thought you were being ironic.
Well, it started out ironic, but then like the more I researched, the more I looked into the character. And
oh, my God.
The more the trilogy completely fucking sucked. Like, 1, 2, and 3 are all complete.
The more Jar Jar fanfiction you're enjoying.
Yeah, all those movies are terrible. So Jar Jar is like so terrible that he's actually great.
Exactly.
That's it right there.
He's freaking hilarious.
Oh, like, my God.
All right, moving on.
Right along.
What have you been playing?
I mean, you know what? Since I'm like one of the guys around the office that plays sports, I have the Madden 07 for review for EGM. And I just some of the same things that I thought out of seeing it at EA's last event are the same thing. How much of a sim is a good thing in a sports game? I mean, don't you get to a point where it's like, we play Winning 11 all the time, right?
All the time.
We have this huge rivalry, right? Because Luke beats the crap out of me 9 times out of 10, and then I get lucky once in a while.
It's a good game.
It's tons of fun, but to your point.
Right. Well, so my point is that, especially in football, this game has gotten to be so much of a technical football game that you can't just sit down like, I remember being a kid and sit, well, not a kid, but you know, like in my mid-20s,
back in 1964,
whatever, in the 20s and going home for Christmas, like at college time and sitting down with the Genesis and playing a few games of Madden with my little brother. You can't just sit down and play Madden anymore and get the game out of
it. There's like a quick game option, isn't there?
No, but he's not talking about it in terms of that. You mean in terms of gameplay?
Because
like, I remember my friend, when I was in 8th or 9th grade, my friend Cooper and I would play Madden on Sega Genesis, and he's like, No matter whether he'd played that version or not, you could pick up and play it. And there is no
in England. I can remember working on a Mega Drive mag and playing Joe Montana football and being able to have a decent gameplay experience.
Well, you know what, guys?
Not really understanding the sport, and you can't do that anymore.
I remember Tecmo Bowl had 3 plays and we liked it.
Four.
But you know what? It's not that anymore. Things evolve. Things get more complex.
I'm saying there's a space for that still, especially now. There's a spot for Blitz or Tecmo Bowl because now when I'm playing this game, if I'm not thinking every minute of every quarter, then it makes me pay for it. You know, I have to.
But isn't that what EA is trying to do with the street games?
Oh, with the street games. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's
what they're trying to do with the street games. But I think
you just agreed with something. What was it?
I thought you were going to say that wasn't that what they're trying to do with Madden.
Oh.
And it is what they're trying to do with Madden because they're really going for that hardcore game. I mean, they're going for that game where you have to come up to the line and read the safeties and read the backers. And
yeah, but it seems to me that Madden's gone so far in a certain direction that they needed to plug it with something that was more gameplay focused. And I got the impression that that was kind of the street strategy, right?
It is the street strategy, but I like what Blitz did with the last iteration of Blitz, which was an 11-man football game, but played more wide open.
Right.
Which is, I think there's big room for that. I thought it was a cool game. And so, I don't know. I mean, Madden, it's super intense if you're a hardcore football fan.
So you think this is going to be a huge year for Madden? Because it tends to sort of get really huge and then dwindle and then get really huge again. And so is it an up or a down year for Madden?
It's another Madden year, which is another year, another season, and another Madden.
So next year is probably going to be a better year.
Well, next year they're going to have more competition.
There's promises every year, right?
Well, they have more to deliver next year because there'll be a PS3 one next year, so the pressure's on.
They can stop gimping it.
But you know, next year there'll be an all new Blitz, and we're also hearing next year 2K like unlicensed football game next year.
And although Brian wasn't tweaked by it, Superstar is a lot of fun. Superstar, very cool mode. Superstar, very very cool mode.
Yeah.
Brian was tweaked about some other stuff, though. I don't know if we can share that.
Well, let's wait until we get a comment back. But basically, there's going to be downloadable content in Madden, and we're trying to find out whether it's going to be, you know, pay for play or not. So we'll get back to you on that.
Microtransactions.
Whether it's going to be prison rape.
Right.
Or fun.
So, but on the free demo side, something I did download from FileFront was the GTR 2 demo for PC.
Right.
You played GTR 1, right?
I did, yeah.
So what's the appeal of that game?
Pretty much exactly what you were just saying about Madden.
Because it's such a hardcore driving sim, yeah. Right?
Is that what the name of the game? Is that a stand for something?
GTR, yeah. It's a touring car racing, and it's big in Europe, but it's starting to pick up. We're starting to see some of the series here, but it's you know, like heavily tweaked street cars, and there's different grades of it. But it grew out of the touring car stuff. It's a real hardcore simulation.
Yeah, it's super hardcore. I was surprised that for all the celebration it's gotten, like amongst fans, that the graphics on it not so impressive. I mean, this physics model is definitely there. The physics model is more than there. If you take it above beginner, you're just like, ah.
Plus the online multiplayer was really huge because, like, 20 plus cars on the track, and it was all real people, which you don't see in many.
That's cool. A lot of times it's like four people.
I didn't know it had that.
That was GTR that had the big multiplayer stuff, right?
I don't know. We'll find out on our forums, I'm sure.
Someone will tell us.
Within 3 hours of this being live, yeah, There'll be a full discussion thread on it. But
right.
So the potential is there for a hardcore racing, but I wasn't so overwhelmed by it. I'm going to try it again. You going to come by and check it out?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, Luke, playing games or just writing news and getting pissed?
Lots of writing news, getting pissed, not a lot of playing games. You and I played probably 15 games, winning 11 this week.
Which is awesome.
Upgraded from, winning 11, 9, by the way. I don't want anyone
not
to think.
Not 10.
We haven't messed around with 10. I know we have it, and we've been offered to play it a bunch of times, but
we should play it because apparently the control is better.
I think you fear change.
I do.
I suppose another game I was playing that I want to talk about real fast. Killzone Liberation for PSP. I hadn't played it previously, but I played it today, and it's fun. It's like an old school top down.
It's like Contra, right?
It's like, yeah, Mercs or like
what was it called? Like Operation Wolf or something in the arcades?
That's not the top down game. No, this plays like Mercs or Akari Warriors or Commando. But
nice.
Yeah, it's really pick up and play fun, 6-player multiplayer. I don't know. I had a good time.
Man, I'd love to have something new to put in my PSV. That would be awesome.
That would be a first in a long time.
A very long time. Actually, I was just thinking about that today because I dragged my PSP out to charge it, and I was looking, I was going, you know, the best games I own for this are still Wipeout, Luminous, and Hot Shots Golf.
Well, we actually have Killzone, so if you want to play it, I'll let you try it.
Did you upgrade to 2.8 or whatever
8?
It is? 2.8? Yeah.
No, I haven't done that yet.
Because you can properly subscribe to RSS video and audio now.
You know, I usually wind up watching that stuff on my desk, you know, on a big screen, but that's a cool idea.
But, I mean, they're finally realizing that, you know, the PSP can do things the iPod can't.
I played something on my PSP this week. I played the Ultimate whatever and...
Ghosts and Goblins?
Yeah, I just picked up a copy in the office and screwed around with. It was frustrating.
It's highly controversial in pages of Electronic Gaming Monthly.
That is. It's very polarizing.
Got a 4.5.
Oh, I did see that.
And like an 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can see why pretty much in both cases.
Yeah,
it's,
me too.
I mean... It's really, really, really unforgiving.
Yeah.
Really they always were.
Are you a classic gamer? Do you like that stuff?
Within reason. This to me feels like it could be a bit much.
Well, and part of the problem is, part of what makes that series like lovable is it's bad jumping. It's like, it's terrible jump control. It's nostalgic and fun.
See, I never liked Ghosts and Ghouls, but I loved Maximo. Maximo was the shit.
Overrated.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I loved it.
The D-pad on the PSP. It was great for Powered Up. I love Mega Man Powered Up, but it's not good enough this time.
Just not.
The actual D-pad on it doesn't feel right. He just doesn't feel right.
Oh, that's a shame.
Oh well, we did switch up to club leagues in the football game, soccer game. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's like we pressed turbo.
Yeah, the first game Garnet destroyed me. It took me a whole game to get used to the new speed. He was Chelsea, and I think I was AC Milan.
Yeah, you're AC Milan.
It was awesome.
Cool.
And then he kicked me around the field a few times. He has an incredible goaltender. Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. Dude dives all the way across the...
Keeper.
Keeper, yeah. Goalie, keeper.
What about the message boards? I mean...
Hold on. We got to figure out what John's playing.
I haven't had a chance to play much because I was away most of the week schmoozing games industry executives, which I'll talk about in a little while. But I am nearly done with Prey. And then I have also been playing NASCAR 07, which is a review game.
Oh.
So how is that left turn?
Left turn's, you know, it's very left.
Some of the road courses involve turning right as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's last year they kind of, because they were onto something a couple of years ago, and then last year they kind of messed it up, and they seem to have gone back to the way they did with the 05 game again, which is a bit more interesting, and it's a bit more of the career thing. And we were playing online on Xbox One earlier today, and I don't know. It's got some way to go, I think.
Oh, but is that because you don't like NASCAR? I mean, we're both race fans, and I know I could give two shits about
NASCAR. I loved NASCAR 05. Like, and the reason that I went so wild for it is because I'm not that big of a fan of the sport. I have an appreciation for it, but the game was great. Uh-huh. And the game actually prompted me to try and check out, you know, thinking maybe I'm missing something, maybe I'm just like, and then last year's game was just crushingly disappointing, and then 07 looks like it's going to be a bit better.
Can you use your PSP as a rearview mirror?
I don't think so.
They haven't put that functionality in yet. Just be checking. Patient.
Did you want to hit some of the hot threads on the message boards first? Or
yes,
should
after
week?
The... So there's, like last week, I think rather than sort of dig into specific comments, there's some threads you should go to boards.oneup.com, go to the OneUp Show, OneUp Yours area. There was a thread on the Gears release date from Tefizza that I thought was interesting, and I know you probably want to talk about this as well, but he says he thinks it's too soon.
No.
The actual release date?
The announcement of the release
date?
No,
he thinks the game is being released too soon.
The only way I would think that is if it ends up not being good.
I think some people came away from a lot of the E3 coverage thinking that maybe it wasn't all it was cracked up to be. I don't know. There definitely seems to be a conversation heading
in that
direction.
Did anyone else play it at E3? I played it.
Yeah.
Skin played it. And, dude, it was awesome. It was fantastic, and it played.
Most people felt that way.
It was fun.
Yeah, but I'm saying as far, technically, it was totally technically competent. There was no problems with the game at all.
I definitely saw some pretty shitty bugs that happened. So that would explain
that was kind of the conversation.
It.
Like maybe that was, you know, is it really an 06 game? But then sort of after he'd posted that, there was another thread: Gears of War. Sorry, too busy hyperventilating. About Symphony of the Night on Xbox Live Arcade, which is a thread that's just going crazy right now that Indie, a.k.a. Rex, started. So go jump on that.
Oh, he's back from the ban that I served him.
He's a good kid. Leave him alone.
Dude, he was out of line. He had to take a five-day timeout.
He's got some good ideas, that kid.
A really popular thread right now is the If You Could Kill a Franchise, What Would It Be? That Symphony posted. It's like 8-9 pages right now. So far, a lot of Bond hate. Not a lot of confidence in what Activision might do with it.
Bond already killed its own franchise?
Well, you know, Activision picking it up. They're doing something next year. It's not this
Treyarch.
Year, is it? Yeah, Treyarch are doing it. Some of the stuff that you would expect: Final Fantasy, GTA, Mega Man popped up a few times. People kind of sick of Mega Man.
There are 12 releases a year.
They do run it down.
Yeah.
A couple of other things: the board members' pile of shame stuff is continuing to be some of the most popular stuff on the board. There's a suggestion thread which people should pile onto. There's now also a literary pile of shame thread.
I saw that.
People suggesting books, which we applaud. Skip is applauding in the background there.
Take
people
a look.
Still
it's
read?
In a book. Reading Rainbow.
There you go.
And one other one that I think is a very interesting conversation that just started recently from Red Swirl is titled Must Every Game Involve Killing Things, which is getting a lot of really good response. It's something that pops up every now and then, but this is a particularly good debate that you should go contribute to.
Man, Red Swirl has definitely been on the brain food this last week because he was definitely hitting the question of the week really hard, too. I wanted to point out he's one of the key threads that I pulled, and he was answering throughout that thread. You know, every so often he'd like be responding to people's feedback. So, Red Swirl, dude, you brought it strong. His point about who's to blame for, of course, our question of the week last week was who's to blame for the demonization of games, and the answers went all over the board. So, I give some of the general stuff we got. We got a lot of this whole, you know, oh, it's age related foo, whatever. You know, I think that I don't know that really plays to me. What do you think, Shane?
In terms of like.
Gender gap
or age gap?
Well, age, the whole age related foo goes that, well, the people who are in power are all too old to understand video games, and
not anymore, because a lot of people in the media grew up with video games now. I mean, like 20 years ago,
they're still struggling with it though. And I mean, this week we did something with the guy from the Times and a guy from CNN and a guy from ABC, and they said that they are the lone voice still in their organization. The guys that are on the video game beat still have to go up against someone in control who's older, who will hit the scandal because it's easy press,
right.
But when it gets into the more specific stuff, it's still we're still a way off, I think. Maybe, I think in 10 years it's not going to be an issue. But right now, the people in control are still, it's still sensational. It's still something to poke fun at.
Are we on the cusp of the point where that's no longer going to be
an issue? It's coming. I mean, the guys that have grown up with it are getting into more influential positions. And at least they're in places now where they can continue to bombard their editors and producers with, you know, we need to do a story on this. It's not something sensational. It's not to belittle. It's just an interesting entertainment story.
Yeah, I mean, you do notice that a lot of the print and, you know, TV media and stuff are out of touch. Like, every year I see a commercial for some product, and for the video game sound effect in the commercial, it's Atari 2600 Pac-Man. This happens every year. And I'm always like, is that what, like, some advertiser thinks video games still sound like?
We're
like,
seeing it.
2600 Pac-Man?
We are seeing better coverage, actually, off of TV, but within the same network. So, Daniel Seaberg, who does the game stuff for CNN, you don't see much on CNN itself, but there's this thing. Have you ever seen CNN Pipeline? It's a subscription thing that they do, and there's podcast. There's a video game podcast on that now, and a lot of video
Daniel's
stuff.
Daniel's actually come out here. He really gets it. Yeah.
So there's a lot of that, and it's coming up through the sort of back way, and it's slowly like weaving its way into the general stuff. But I still think it's a few years before we're going to start seeing. You know, like, when Halo's released, there'll be maybe something about the number of copies it sells.
See, I remember when Halo 2 came out, like, it was either Jay Leno or Jimmy Kimmel that night. They actually had, like, a live broadcast from the line in New York, in Times Square, and I was really surprised.
Yeah, but they poked fun at all the geeks, didn't they?
They did, but they did, like, think Halo was cool at the same time.
Right, but it was still, they couldn't help themselves making fun of all these guys that haven't got anything better to do than wait for a video game, and that's got to go away.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, Beige is definitely not one of those pips who's out of touch, and I'm going to touch on his post for a minute, but we're not going to dig into it too deep because he went on a philosophical level that was way beyond what we have time to talk about. He got in, basically, if you want to learn a whole lot about political theories and liberals and conservatism, then pick up his thread and read it, and then go back and have a latte to get your brain going, which will tie into his thread, and then read it again, because he brings up the point that this is all driven by a fear and anxiety culture about the future that permeates all of the United States, and it's just being exercised through game culture as much as it is through any other parts of the media and outlets. And it's an intense examination of how neoconservatism has come back in 2006 and anyway.
It sounds epic.
Those damn neocons.
It is epic.
But it's an important point, and it's something that comes up a lot, and And again, it's something that the games industry is talking about, and that is that if, you know, a high school principal censors a high school paper, then the big news organizations will take it up as a cause, like, you know,
right.
It's constitutional rights. Yet when similar rights are violated in video game space, it's footnote, you know, you don't see it because I think there's an assumption that some of the stuff that's leveled against video games is just ridiculous and is going to get overturned. Like the Minnesota thing, you know, the $25 fine. That was introduced so that guy could introduce a bill knowing full well that the courts would over. And it was just attention for him. And I think the press, because it's video games and they don't really want to be seen to get him behind it because, you know, Hillary's going to go on another tear about it because there's an election coming up. And it's still not there, even though it's a big part of entertainment. It's an easy whipping boy, and it's an easy whipping boy because half the people out there don't understand it, so they fear it, so it's easy.
So let's bang through some of these responses, though, just to kind of get an idea of what some of the general take was. Neo Job, who likes to get out there every so often, he's like, really? Who gives a damn anyway? He's like, why the hell do we care about the mainstream media? Why do we concern about being accepted by the people who, I love the way you put it, their idea of newsworthiness includes which member of some poison cover band Paris Hilton blew last night? It's not a bad point. I think the reason we care is because...
Is that a real story?
She's blowing ex-poison guys now?
No,
ex-poison cover band guys.
Cover bands.
You don't even have to have been in Poison.
I know.
I could play the riff. I could play the riff from Talk Dirty to me. Does that mean I'm in with a chance? Dude.
In.
AFK calling John's wife.
I think the reason we care is because, well, I mean, you know, hey, some of us are adults and we don't like to hear our peers ragging on us any more than anybody else likes to hear their peers ragging on them, right? Mobius One, he got into a very good discussion about how both sides are to blame. He says, I cringe. He says both sides are to blame, but we have to look at the game side of it because that's the sides we have control over. He says, this is a great point. I cringe whenever I see an advertisement trying to cash in on the whole violence factor. Take Hitman, for example. Was it really necessary to run their ad campaign for blood money with the woman lying dead in her bathtub?
It's a game about an assassin.
Okay. And then how about the whole television ad where the tagline is, you're the real killer?
Well, you are. Bad example.
Bad example? Bad example? Or could they have played it up a different way and not have had it come off quite so brutal?
It's called Hitman. It's an M-rated game.
Did anybody bring up the idea that, like, you know, the changing face of gaming, like what Nintendo is doing, reaching out to older gamers might, you know, in the next few years really help and, like, cause a positive trend?
Nintendo and Sega combined reaching out to older gamers.
The interesting thing there, I think, though, is that people that will play those things don't think of themselves as gamers, so they won't identify with this whole conversation.
Right. If you buy a Sudoku or a cookbook, or you're like, I'm not a gamer, I'm buying software.
And we saw that in the thread because it got a little more cynical. I mean, there was a post by Leo or G. Leo that says, he basically goes down this whole, like, games are evil, games are villainous. You know, gaming has the promise of a generation-defining medium. It is violent, perhaps unnecessarily so. It's childish, perhaps unjustly so, but it's evolving, and we're just privileged to take part of it, that it's reflecting the entire change of the overall culture. But, I mean, that was really the thread here. No, they really didn't. There wasn't a lot going down that road. Red Swirl, again, had an excellent post where he started off talking about how it was just the evolution of the media, which we've talked about before, you know, that this is an infancy period for the media, much like books had theirs centuries ago, and then television and movies, and they've all been through it. Soul Hero is really interesting. Soul Hero says that takes the multi-user approach to, hey, you can't blame it on one single force, but he says the correct question to ask is, who's most at fault? Because they had the greatest opportunity to change the current predicament. And then he turns around and points a finger at us as journalists. He says that the blame, or the burden, as he puts it, on the current state of affairs goes on the shoulders of you, the game journalists.
Why game journalists?
Because we're the ones who have the most influence, because he takes the gamers themselves and calls them just a small voice in a sea of millions.
See, I don't know. I disagree with that as well, because people that read our stuff are people that are actively seeking out video games information, and the problem is not that. I mean, our audience will always be our audience, but the problem comes with, how do you get the New York Times to take it more seriously, and why those journalists don't pounce on it. And it's like,
but I'm sure someone has gone back and, like, researched when film became legitimate in, like, the 1930s, you know, like, because when it first started, it wasn't taken seriously. It was considered, mm-hmm. like, you know, like, low entertainment, and, like, now it is, so you can trace that and see maybe the same thing will happen to games.
Yeah, but the audience needs to evolve, and then our part of it will evolve. But you need people to have more of a general interest in being entertained by games. And then they'll seek it out through the mainstream press, and then if there's something they're really interested in, they might pick up an enthusiast thing. But at the moment, our audience is all enthusiasts. We don't have any people that have a casual interest in video games that are going to go out and pick up a copy of EGM.
Right.
It's extremely unlikely.
Or listen to this podcast, probably.
So doesn't that put us in an interesting predicament now, because one of our biggest showcases where we actually got to see tens of thousands of people was E3, and now it's gone. So what are we going to do, right?
Well, I mean, we talked about that this week. I think I talked with all of you about the direction that's going to go, and that there is going to be a big onus of responsibility on the game industry to find a way to plug that hole.
When we come back in a minute, we'll talk about what's going to be next for E3 and what it used to do for us.
You're listening to One Up Yours on the One Up Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to the One Up Radio Network. You know the name of the podcast you'd like to hear, press 1 now. You have selected Radio PM, starring the editors of the official U.S. PlayStation magazine. To download an episode at radiopm.oneup.com, press 1 now. To listen to a promo, press 2 now. In a world ripped apart by war, only one magazine.
All right, and we're back, and we're ready to kick off the wake for E3. Everybody, bottles up. Goodbye to E3. Per the PR release, really dead from what we...
It's more of a see you later, dude.
Yes, it is more.
Didn't they give it a new name today? Didn't it get the media something or other?
E3 media... something.
So it's not going away. It's just downsizing and becoming more intimate.
Yeah, and the Promised Land's still around, too. Oh, no, it's not.
But
do you remember the Promised Land?
You sound very bitter.
You do sound bitter.
You think it's a good thing, really?
I think it's a really good thing.
I think it's a good thing, too.
It's not necessarily a good thing for the city of Los Angeles, but it's a pretty good thing for the games industry.
Why is that?
Which part?
Why is it a... Screw Los Angeles.
Yeah,
but Los Angeles
care.
Is a good thing. Los Angeles is losing 37,000 hotel rooms and like $5 million in taxicab revenue.
You know, I'm definitely glad I'm not going back to L.A. I mean, I'm fine with that.
Well, it's still in L.A.
It's still in L.A.
We won't need as many people to cover it. I will just
still going
to
be there.
It'd be helpful if we stayed informed before we did the show. It'll be taking place at, like, right now, Doug Lowenstein's talking about having it at two hotels down where it's in suites in downtown LA, and the developers will be like put up in suites for meeting rooms. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the new format. But yeah, how do you feel? Like, you're glad it's over. Why?
I'm not glad it's over. I'm glad it's changing. It was getting too big of a spectacle, and I think the bad part of it, I think, is that it was definitely a stake in the ground that everyone rallied around, and it was a way that the games industry got a lot of attention in the middle of the year. And it was really good for us as a business. We got traffic and circulation up, and it was a lot of things were moving towards that. But I think that was as a direct result of the fact that suddenly all of media's attention was on the games industry, and we were all able to benefit from it. And I think that's going to be diminished. But at the same time, we're going to get a lot more out of it. I think we're going to be able to get a lot better quality information out to readers as a result, because it's not going to be the mad rush that it is. It's not going to be as difficult to arrange things. It's going to be more focused on key products. It's not going to be just all the wank that was there last year.
I think publishers like it better because they can control their message more. I mean, what we've been seeing...
And that's good?
That's why I hate it.
It's good for them. I mean, what we've seen with these giant press conferences, what the first parties do, I mean, they were already controlling their message. They were already having their own events during E3.
Before E3. I mean, you were already going to E3 knowing what was going to be 90% of what was going to be.
That was the problem. There were events before E3 and after E3. So the show itself was just an enormous look how big my dick is competition.
And the question is, who was the E3 show floor useful for? It wasn't useful for us.
Absolutely not useful for us.
You know, it was awesome. The first 3 years I went to E3, which was 9 years ago, I was just a kid who worked at EB. And for me, it was the most awesome thing I'd ever seen. It was like this giant place full of games I could play. And it was really cool. But now, as like someone who's trying to cover these games and have meetings, I hated the E3 show floor. It was a disaster. It was so crowded, so hot, so loud. You couldn't get it. You couldn't play anything.
You asked who benefits from the E3 show floor, and I think this year Nintendo did absolutely benefit from it. And we had a quote on our website that was, I think it was Lawrence D. Talk, or however you say it, from Ubisoft, talking about how he wasn't sure if Nintendo would have enjoyed the same amount of success. Mm-hmm. With the Wii, if they didn't have a spectacle like
but
E3.
They'll still do a press conference, which is where the bulk of the Wii love came from. A lot of people that were talking about Wii at E3 didn't get to see it, mm-hmm. because it was a six-hour line and they couldn't cut in front, but the buzz was there. And it wasn't because of the line. It was because of Reggie and Miyamoto and everything getting up there.
I disagree. I think
the buzz was the six-hour line.
A huge part of the buzz is the line. Walking into E3 and seeing all these people waiting in line to see something on some level has to make you go, man, I wonder what's back there.
But wouldn't all those kids still be excited about Wii even if they couldn't stand in line?
Yeah, what the hell are you talking about? It's a new Nintendo console. You don't think it's going to get buzz? They've never shown it before.
Symphony would never have even gotten anyone to bat an eye if it wasn't for people walking out of the booth going, holy crap, that was so cool.
It was at the press conference. People batted an eye because it's how Miyamoto started it. How many people do you know actually went in and tried it? You got in. There were a lot of people at E3 that didn't. And with the less people at E3, you can go to Nintendo's media room and you will be able to try it and you'll be able to blog about it and it will get just as much attention.
I actually didn't get in.
So what the fuck are you talking about?
I also like that this new E3 is being pushed back 2 months, which I think is better because I know a lot of companies, a lot of developers would be like busting their asses to try to get a playable demo done for E3. And sometimes that would mean like the game isn't actually getting done because they're so busy getting this one little level polished for E3 that like that level is done but nothing else is
They'll
done.
They'll fucking still be busting their asses trying to get shit done for July. People are procrastinators. Developers will continue
that's
to procrastinate
still
and save it to the last minute and be like, we worked so hard to get this shit ready so you could check it out in room 301B of the Hilton.
But
fuck that.
But to Shane's point that you poo-pooed but was extremely important, they are going to be able
control the message.
It doesn't have to be on the show floor on a 20-foot screen. It will be in a meeting room where they can sit down with you and explain to you.
Microsoft wouldn't be putting too human out there for you to touch.
Wow.
It's the public. I mean, it wasn't public, but it was essentially public.
Right.
The games that were on the big video walls that were like being really showy were the stuff where that stuff was important. But if you go to the, I mean, the reason there were so many behind closed doors demos this year, where there were so many games that just weren't fit to be put out on the show floor. And that's going to happen more and more with next gen because the games are going to take longer. They're more expensive. They want to be able to sit down and show it to you, but they don't want to risk having it up there for everyone to see and it to suddenly crash.
Well, they're going
to
take longer and they're going to be more expensive, and then developer and publisher risk goes up.
Right. So they don't want to be dropping $10 million on, like, showing it on a huge video wall to you when they can get you in a room to see it.
The two people...
Right, I would rather see it on a small TV. I don't want to see it on a huge screen anyway.
We're in agreement then.
Yeah, I would rather see it. I'm not saying... I'm saying from this end, you know, I'm glad that it's going to be small rooms. I'm glad it's going to be small, quiet rooms. I'm very old. I hate loud noise. I'm extremely cranky. I don't want to run around a giant show floor. What I'm concerned with is something that you and I have talked about a little bit this week, is that the vice grip of message control that this is going to create in terms of attendance size dropping to like 5,000. I'm not worried about getting in.
You said 7,000.
I saw Doug's quote was like 5 to the Rocky Mountain.
Well, this actually brings me to where I believe the two largest victims of this thing are. Well, number one is Kensha Hall. Mm-hmm. No, like Kensha Hall, if you don't know, was like the place at E3 where all like the tiny little publishers came and brought their wares. Like, we're never going to meet with those people ever again. We're never going to see like the Korean Gaming Alliance or any of those companies. Like, it's gone. The other people who are victims are fan sites. Fan sites are not going to be among those 7,000 people. The majority of them.
Well, like, let me take it a step beyond the fan sites. It's the enthusiasts, and that's my hang-up with this, is that this
the
is...
enthusiasts themselves?
Yeah, this is an enthusiast-driven hobby. This is everyone who's listening...
The enthusiast media will be there.
The enthusiast media, the enthusiasts themselves weren't invited.
Right.
But they got in. Come on, how many people on the message boards...
I got in when I worked at EB, and like fan site kids get in because they get business licenses, but maybe...
Okay. How many people
maybe
on the message boards...
Maybe they shouldn't be there.
Maybe they shouldn't. That's an argument that I'll talk about in a second, but how many times on the message boards during the first stage you see, oh crap, I never got to go. I always wanted to go to E3. That's what everybody said.
Well, you know what? I want to go to Show West and I want to go to the Oscars and I don't get to go to those Garnett. And maybe you don't get everything you want.
You're not a movie enthusiast.
Yes, I am. I'm a huge movie enthusiast. And I like all sorts of media. That doesn't mean I get to go to them. It's not a right. Just because you like games doesn't mean you have a right to go to E3.
The perception of E3 was that you could find a way to get into the door.
Bullshit.
Not anymore.
That's a problem.
The
perception was that you could get in.
Well, sorry.
You could go to work for EB for a part-time and then get it.
Okay,
door,
so
right?
Flip that. What
yeah, who are you arguing for?
Okay, so Shane got to go to E3 when he worked at EB.
Yes.
Right.
What
I did too.
Good did that do for anybody?
Besides
except
me.
Shane.
Except me.
It didn't do anything. So that's what I'm saying is why...
In fact, I was in the way. I was like a nerd in the way.
Show, Garnett gets very confused.
He's old.
I have no clue what you're talking about here, Garnett.
Wasn't the whole point of the show, wasn't a big part of the show that it gained popular momentum because it was such a big crowd, because you had enthusiasts there, because you had those people standing in line at the Wii that generated all that excitement, and that's why ABC and NBC and CBS
because
and
of the
CNN,
visual spectacle, yes,
because of the
and that's
spectacle.
A huge problem that the gaming industry has to find a way to replace.
Those crowds, those people, those fansite kids are a symptom of the problem that was E3, you know?
They're a symptom of the fact that E3 never controlled the damn event. Why didn't they do it more like a TGS? Why didn't they have like a real... The first 2 hours of the show the last couple of years has been great because they actually controlled it, you know, getting onto the floor, right? Why couldn't they have done a couple of days like that and then had a few days at the end where it was just open?
Well,
why even fool around with this
thing
stupid
was they,
shit?
They wanted to be the biggest convention in LA and that, you know, having all those guys there help, but not anymore.
So I guess the question that I would ask, that I wanted to lead to is why did they even screw around with this whole, oh, it's a trade industry only event when you could go to work at EB or you could come up with a business license from your dad?
E3 was created to make money. E3 made money. And the more people who went there, the more money it made.
So I'm saying, why screw around with that? Why didn't they just make it an open show for the last couple
because
of
days? Because it was so fucking expensive for the people funding it. That's why. Am I right? I mean, that's why it no longer exists. Yeah. Because EA doesn't think it makes sense for them to dump $20 million on a fucking TitanTron 360-degree screen to show new fucking Madden when all the good shit, Army of Two, that Spore game that Will Wright's making, and the fucking Command & Conquer game, like, that's the good shit. And that's not out out there and you're not seeing it. You're seeing goddamn Madden again, and it's a waste of fucking money to show your B-roll when your A-game's behind closed doors. Cut out the B-roll and show the A-game, and that's what we're going to get. That's why I went away. Bye.
I just hope we still have good parties.
I think Luke just exploded.
Fuck, dude. Jesus Christ.
What's actually an alternate version of your argument, Garnet? Are you okay there, Luke? Why, like, the games industry, I mean, once you've been around it or watching it or anything, it's very much about control. I mean, it's a very controlling business. It's part of the entertainment industry. Of course, it has to be. So when something is so tightly controlled, the way this went down is very unusual. Because you hear any of the statements that came out of you know, from board members in the aftermath of this, of the, you know, the announcement, it's that, yeah, we've been talking about shit like this like every year, and you know, we've been thinking about downsizing.
We heard a year ago EA and Sony wanted to pull out, and then like they didn't end up pulling out because we still had E3 this year. And I have to wonder, do you think they got a break? Do you think EA and Sony got a break this year so they would still go to E3?
I don't know, but the fact that it's suddenly like just like done,
yeah,
that is. And unusual, and there's a story that hasn't been told yet, and I think it's going to be a while before it starts to sort of trickle out as to what really went down, because we're hearing the sanitized ESA board agreed sanctioned
Unified
version.
Front.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Some of us are. Luke wasn't hearing anything from it.
Yeah. Bump, bump, dum. Yeah, we invited Doug to come on today. Doug Lowenstein, we invited him to come on. We invited him to come talk to 1UP. Nah. He's not interested.
Do you think we'll ever know what really went down?
No.
I don't know, but I mean, we know that there was definitely dissension in the ranks.
Right.
And there's, 22 ESA members, and they're presenting a unified front because it's their job to, but they're definitely not. And I think not only are the fan sites that you describe going to be, I think it's going to be, you mentioned Kenshi Hall. Red Octane were in Kenshi Hall.
Yes, they were.
And so it's not just the little guys, it's the innovators.
Right.
If the people that have an idea and they didn't think they were going to be able to present at E3 and now they can, they could get into Kenshi Hall. So what I hope happens is that, you know, these guys that are booking suites, it might be a bit more like GDC where it levels the playing field a little bit so that you can go and see Activision, you can go and see EA, and they may or may not show us Army of Two or whatever is Army of Three, presumably. But maybe, you know, someone smaller. Like, you know, I hope that Atlas and Majesco and those level guys don't get sort of like muscled out, because then it really will be bad. But if it's leveling the playing field and we can go from meeting room to meeting room and see what people have and they can show us where they're innovating and it's not just, you know, the bollocks that we normally get. The quality of everything that comes out of it will be better.
How tight do you think the restrictions are on invitations going to be, especially to media? Because there's a lot of, I've talked about a little bit this week, how important I think that media covering the game industry is at every single level. And I feel like that closing off E3 like this and this new media expo or whatever it's going to be called is going to create an opportunity for publishers to not invite particular people, like game blogs like Kotaku or Joystick.
Oh, they'll get in.
You think they'll still get in?
Peter Moore invited the bloggers specifically to a breakfast.
Well, I mean,
I think that the high-profile fan sites and blogs will get invited, but not all of them, and not a lot of them, and not most of them.
And there's always a lot of coverage about E3 that's being written by people that aren't at E3, because the observations of what's going on and the coverage are just as valid as the people that are there. I mean, you brought up things like the Oscars and everything. Not everyone gets invited to that, but everyone talks about it.
Exactly.
The illusion is going to be essentially the same. If people think that something is bullshit, it's going to come out whether they were there or not.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with E3, it was a trade show, but at the same time, it was kind of like a big convention that a lot of nerds went to play games. And that isn't what we need out of it.
Right.
So
there are other things for that.
There are other things for that.
What other things are there for that?
Digital Life.
PAX. QuakeCon.
Digital Life.
QuakeCon's going on right now, right?
Right.
That is. So E3 Media Festival is going to find itself on a level playing field in one regard, which is it's going to have a lot of competition.
Yep.
For where
a developer... Oh, boy. Austin Game Conference, Women in Game Conference, you name it. They're all over the place. DICE. All these things suddenly become just as valid. But hopefully, each one will find its purpose. I really hope to God that the CMP guys don't try and turn GDC into something bigger than it is.
Well, I think it's already going that way. This year, it was more media-oriented than it had ever been.
GDC needs to be where developers go and can exchange ideas and...
Well, I think that's what DICE is becoming, and GDC is becoming like E3.
I hope it doesn't go too far, because then it'll be the end of that.
At least it's like two blocks away this year.
That's true.
It always comes back to what's easiest for Shane. Yeah. Well, E3 Media Festival, easier for me. GDC, two blocks away. Not so into the Austin Games Conference, huh?
Oh, yeah. Got plenty for that.
Strip a queue.
Austin's the only good city in Texas.
Austin, Garnet, Luke, there. Boobs and barbecue. Look for much.
It's going to be fantastic. So that kind of comes to the next question is, what do you want then? What do you want the new development show tour sort of show to look like?
The development.
He means the new E3.
What do you want the new?
What are you talking about?
Allow me to translate.
It won't necessarily be E3, though, right? Because right, there are other shows. What do you want these shows or these mini site shows to be like? What do you want them to be?
Like, what do you want to get out of Leipzig? What do you want to get out of E3? What do you want to get
Leipzig
out of GDC?
Leipzig could be the next E3.
I think it's going to come down. Well, Leipzig's the new ECTS, really. Yeah. I mean, it's the European E3. Yeah.
Yeah, in an international scope.
And that is controlled very much so to be trade only, the way that ECTS was. And, you know, what actually killed ECTS was somebody else launched something very similar, and they launched a public show at the same time. There was a PlayStation Experience that would hit at the same time, and there was too much competition for the amount of money that the games industry had to spend on this stuff. So, you know, when you're spending that much on a game, there's only so much you can do for, you know, public willy waving. And I think that getting things smaller and less expensive and more product focused so we can get good information, like, you know, we were lucky this year. We got some good interviews and some good access at E3. But it was hard. We had to work our asses off to get it. We also had to work our asses off to get into a physical space where we were actually able to execute on it. Like, because it was so noisy. Even in people's booths, it was noisy. You couldn't do an interview. Like, there was a lot of stuff where the guys were complaining that they were listening back to their recordings and they couldn't even hear what people were saying.
People were passing out. E3 is like a war zone. I'm not going to miss that.
I mean, the spectacle was there, but there'll be a way of manufacturing spectacle. And I think, the press conferences could become the big event, you know?
I think they will.
They kind of already, to me, they kind of already are.
How many games are going to get on Good Morning American?
American?
That's
Good Morning American. Yes, it's a new show.
I believe it's America.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my God.
I don't understand where that question's coming from.
No, he means, okay, what he's talking about is that...
I love this. He says something and
the
then you...
The spectacle. Yeah. Well, the spectacle... Just let me translate Garnet for a second. The spectacle of E3 is encapsulated in major news outlets by like 30-second sound bites and the equivalent, like 30-second visual clips. That's like the show floor, the EA booth, the line for the Wii. Without that spectacle, how's that going to get on a morning show?
Do you mean to answer that question?
Yes.
Those morning shows, they get all their B-roll from PR people. It's all completely controlled. Nothing will change.
It's how E3 is marketed and how...
Do you think they're like investigative journalists for Good Morning America going and like creating a story at E3?
Joan London goes deep.
No.
Wow.
You're very idealistic, Garnet, for someone of your age.
It's going to be... But it is...
Jesus Christ.
I see what you're getting. It is going to be harder because there isn't the spectacle to say, this is a really big deal. But I think, you know, Nintendo did their press conference at the Kodak Theater and they filled it. I mean, that's a big place.
That's where they have the Oscars.
You know, so...
What's going to have my
dad
calling me?
They're going to send it... It's going to be the Nintendo...
Saying, wow, are you at that thing in L.A.?
The show just got... This is a requiem.
The thing in L.A., the Spearmint Rhino?
But there's still going to be...
You've had that exact same shit happen, and you've probably had it too, where your parents called and said, oh, are you at that thing in L.A. covering it? That's one of those video game things. Skip's at least nodding his head. Don't stop giving me some shit. You have so much fun giving me shit when I'm talking the truth right there.
There's still going to be that thing in L.A. It's just the central thing is going to be smaller. There's still going to be all the nonsense. Like, Sony spends whatever it is that they said, $10, $12 million. Half of that is the booth. The other half is all the other bullshit they do. The press conference, the party, the
advertising,
the billboards all over L.A. I don't think that stuff's going to go away. I think it's just going to be the massive, like, mini city that they build inside the convention center isn't going
to
be there.
They'll have more to spend, in a way.
They'll have a lot more to spend.
You know?
They'll have a tremendous amount more to spend. So it's not the masses, then. It's everything else they do that controls the media, and that will still be there. That's what you're saying.
I think so, yeah.
You didn't really agree with that, did you?
I don't know at this point. You've confused me so much.
In a related story, we're hearing the Tokyo Game Show. This could be the last one called Tokyo Game Show. Then it might be rolled into these other conventions that do, like, DVDs and electronics on anime. And that's probably a good idea, too. It's like, you know, TGS was kind of the poor man's E3 before.
But it's public.
But two days are public. One day was press only. Yeah.
So it is slightly different. I mean, the pressures on a games publisher to show stuff to the public are infinitely more than showing it to the trade.
Right.
Which is the other side that sort of argues against what you were saying. That, you know, the more trade you are, the more you can reveal things, and the more that, because you can trust that I can show you this thing, and it's like, it's barely alpha, but check it out, and it's impressive. It's the way that, I can remember a really early E3, and you'd go and sit through one of Peter Molyneux's things, where he would, like, show you the bare bones of something, and some, like, this is where we're going with it, and what it's going to look like, and this is, I mean, this is where Peter Molyneux's bad reputation came from, sadly, and that he would just overpromise. But you don't get that from him anymore. The closest you get is Will Wright showing you a little sliver of what Spore's going to be. But the days of sitting down with these sort of blue sky, this is really, really early, but check it out, it's going to be awesome. You don't really get that at E3 anymore. And I think with the new E3, we will start to get it again.
Well, that part will be awesome. That part will be fantastic. And a big part of the drive of E3 was timing, right? Because it was a show to get everybody ready for holiday. It was a very buyer-driven show. Buyers were setting up their holiday orders.
Simon Jeffrey from Sega, one of the things that he said to us this week was that he could get a meeting with any fan site, any press site in the world at E3. But it was always really difficult because of all that noise. That what he really wanted to do was sit down with the buyer from Walmart. And it was difficult because there were so many other like things pulling him a million different ways. And now, if E3 is, going and working with retail and working with the press that are going to talk about the product and get the word out there, the industry should benefit from it.
So that's going to shoot down what I was hoping for, which was that maybe if the shows disperse over a broader calendar time period, that we'd get a more dispersed release schedule. But what you're saying is probably the opposite.
The games industry needs to do something before that can happen, I think, and that is to follow the pattern that Rockstar follows with GTA, and that is when you announce the game, you announce a date, the way a movie studio announces a date for a movie. And until everyone can commit to that comfortably, we're not going to see this spread. It's always going to be the emergence day type bullshit you don't announce the date until you're confident that, and it's too late. And it's like, yeah, really? November? Great. Okay.
Shock and all. Everything moved into fourth quarter still.
Yeah.
So Pitts, well, speaking of emergence day, we're going to come back in just a minute with some news. And not only do we have Luke's rant about release dates and how that's not really newsworthy, we also have quite a bit of stuff about the Wii, which was a big hit at E3. So stick around. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Jeff Green, the editor-in-chief of Computer Gaming World Magazine. With me is Ryan Scott, associate editor of CGW. Say hi, Ryan.
Hi.
Ryan is held at gunpoint right now, and unless you listen to the CGW radio podcast, I'm going to shoot him. So if you want Ryan to live, please listen to the CGW radio podcast at cgwradio.oneup.com or at iTunes. Do it for Ryan. Do it for Ryan's mom.
You're listening to One Up Yours, part of the One Up Radio Network.
All right, and we're back to hit into the news, and we got a big lineup at the front of this to talk about Nintendo's Wii and all kinds of love for the console.
It's blowing up.
But you weren't getting much love, were you?
No.
Dude, on the message boards?
I think they sort of missed it. I think more so I presented it poorly, which
Luke,
I said on
Luke,
Game
you
Rage.
Have referred to it as a peripheral on several occasions.
It is still a peripheral.
Well, I think the big thing was they said you're full of shit, that it's not a revisionist console, it's not a stopgap console, that this is it.
I think that those words will be fed to you in 2.5 years when HD does take a firmer grip and there is a new version of the Nintendo Wii that will still play all the Wii games now, but will also allow for some extra stuff, like some great outputs and some new formats.
The PlayStation 3, those two versions are available from the outset.
So
I don't think Nintendo cares about the HD thing. There may be an upgrade where you can plug it into HD and it'll run in 720
or
whatever, but their strategy is so
left field.
Esoteric.
So completely different from where.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, I said earlier I was off schmoozing, and like we had this big event this week. We do it every year. We call it the Summit, and we get all industry executives from sort of all the US executives and some people from Europe and Japan. They come in and we talk about sort of what's going on in the industry and what's going to affect us over the next year. And the three platform holders all spoke, and George Harrison from Nintendo did a pretty good job of sort of laying out the Wii strategy, and it is very different. And the Wii is basically an extension of the DS strategy. I mean, it's the same idea. And we had the story that you reported on with Laurent and Dave Zucker and Simon Jeffrey talking about game development and announcing Wii stuff. I think the thing that came out of that is that the industry is in sort of turmoil at the moment, as it desperately wants to be mainstream, and at the same time it desperately wants to be cutting edge, and it can't be both. So while everyone's complaining that games are going to cost $15 to $20 million to produce and we're going to have to make less of them and it's going to be really difficult, we need to cut costs, it's going to change everything, they're also desperately want to be mainstream. And Sony's saying, hello, we have 40 million PS2s in the US. That's, you know, you want to put out a game and sell a million copies? It's much easier than doing it on PS3. But we're seeing this sort of disparity in the arguments. So Nintendo comes in and says, you're not going to develop a Wii game alongside a PS3 game. You're going to develop alongside a PS2 game because the technology is very similar. So indirectly, the Wii could be responsible for assisting in the 10-year lifespan of the PS2.
Well, and in so doing, extending the lifespan essentially of the PS3 by giving users a way to stave off buying a PS3 until the price comes down, because their PS2 will still be supported from ported Wii software.
I mean, when they talk about the Wii being the disruptive influence, I mean, they're talking about more than just waving the controller around. It's
wait. In the handheld arena, Nintendo freaking owns the business. Them dictating the terms of selling a console is one thing, but saying that the Wii is going to suddenly come in and change everything, they don't even own a corner of the console business hardly right now. It sounds like this whole new generation thing, I'm sorry, it sounds like a Pepsi ad, and the Wii is like Crystal Pepsi.
But you can't
discount. It's
going
to be gone in a couple of years.
Are you just like overlooking the immense success of the DS?
I think you are possibly the most wrong I've ever heard you be on
this
show.
What I was going to say was, I mean, just like, I think that Garnet totally glossed over the fact that if the, like, everyone makes these jokes like Wii 60.
Yeah.
If the Wii actually does extend the PS2's lifespan further, that extension of the lifespan indirectly helps Sony's PS3, because it will give people pause to upgrade, and then as the price comes down for the PS3. And they're tired of their PS2 finally, and they've been monkeying around with their PS2, then it's PS3 time, and then it's time for total world domination, right, Shane?
So you're mad at me about saying it's going to be gone in 2 years. Prove to me that it's more than just a game-playing peripheral. Tell me that they're not going to be a bunch of people out there buying HDTVs in the next 2 years, and that they're going to...
So what? You can still plug a Wii into it. You can still play the games on it, just because they're not, you know, these amazing cinematic experiences. Like, there's nothing on the DS that... Like, who here has...
Handheld gaming and console home gaming
are
not the same.
Who here has got someone to play a game that hadn't previously played one recently?
On DS. Totally.
All DS.
All DS.
Who has given a DS to someone because they've expressed interest in playing a game? I think all of us have.
I don't give gifts.
It's like Brain Age, or like you buy a DS Lite and you give your DS Fat to somebody who's expressed an interest. They play Brain Age and then they get interested in something else. They don't care that the graphics don't look that good. They don't care. They care that it's a fun experience.
You know,
and
hold on,
it's a
who
way
here is
the video
relating
games.
Portable gaming to home console gaming
it's
when the PSP's already proved that doesn't work?
So, Garnet, I know you didn't
get... You got the argument backwards.
Yeah, you're so confused. You didn't get to play the Wii at E3, we know that. So, I'll tell you, it's really fun, and I bet you have a better chance of getting, like, your wife or your mom or whoever to play Wii Sports than any Xbox 360 game.
Whatever, Gears of War co-op, you and Suzanne?
If my wife or girlfriend or mom wanted to play games, that would be great, but I don't need to go out and buy a DS or a Wii or anything else to try and encourage them to do something they're not interested in doing.
They don't know that they're interested in doing it.
But if there's a Wii...
They only knew the power, Garnet.
Have you ever seen, like, someone playing a game with iToy when there are other people in the room? People want to come in and try it out. And iToy stuff, most of it is really simple. It doesn't need to be HD. It's the fact that it's... You know, you just jump around. You can get your kids playing it and popping bubbles
Garnet, have you seriously not seen a woman playing Nintendogs or Brain Age? Have you really not seen that? I'll show it to you. It's a delightful sight.
Shane has videos on his fucking desktop.
But they're not going to play Gears of War or Oblivion.
Are you really this confused?
But the good thing is that the Wii may bring people in the way the DS is bringing people in, and they'll grow into wanting a particular type of experience, and they may move on to something else. But the Wii is going to be social, and it's going to be a gateway experience, and it's going to be something that you can put on, and anyone in the room will try it. This is what new generation really means. It's that it's not Killzone and Gears of War, which is this, like, you know, cinematic and, like, narrative experience. I think a lot of the games that we see that are going to be successful on Wii and that will sell Wii game are going to be, the most narrative it's going to get is like a Phoenix Wright or a Trauma Center, and it's all going to be relatable, simple games, like proper games, not something trying to be something else.
Well, and the secret, I think, of Wii's success will be that it is really cool for casual people who aren't gamers, but it's also cool for enthusiasts who also are going to have a 360 or, you know, a PS3. So there you go, Garnett.
So despite the fact that Luke called it a peripheral, I'm the only one who's sitting here and thinking, wow, I want them to prove to me that it can go beyond just what we've seen.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Still going to call it a peripheral. I'm
but,
standing
but demanding
that.
HD support... Whatever. I mean, that's not the defining factor of
splitting hairs.
So everyone loves the Wii. That was the story. That's been the story this week. It's the story we've seen emerge.
Ubisoft certainly loves Wii.
Yeah, Laurent Dutalk at the Ziff Game Summit. Sam reporting him said that the first time I picked up that sucker, that's the Nintendo Wii, I couldn't stop playing it. Pretty ringing endorsement, especially when you consider the fact that the following day Ubisoft announces that they're going to have 7 games ready for launch.
You know why that happened?
Why?
Because Laurent accidentally said that they have 7 games in development during his speech.
Really? Did he mention Prince of Persia coming to the Wii?
Because, no, he didn't.
Because there's been some sort of controversy over the internets today as to whether or not Prince of Persia is coming to the Wii. It's not coming as a launch title, however. It's tentatively slated for 2007, early 2007, probably in the March, you know, the Ubisoft March release time. The reason it's controversial is because Ubisoft, essentially, what we can tell, issued 2 versions of the press release. The oops, all berries, we screwed up version that included Prince of Persia and was reported on a couple of French websites. And the appropriate LOL, we're saving the Prince of Persia announcement for a later issue of Nintendo Power announcement. Another little bonus treat coming to the Nintendo Wii is the Mortal Kombat Armageddon. And like Shane talked about at lunch the other day, Rampage.
Which I'm not really happy about because...
Not happy with something Nintendo and the Wii is doing?
Well, yeah. Shocked. It's surprising because, you know... Mortal Kombat, okay, it has a lot of fans, I can see it. But Rampage is a $20 current-gen title.
I don't think Mortal Kombat is a smart choice for them to do on
You know
the
what?
Wii.
And Ed Boon didn't.
He didn't.
But somehow his song certainly changed.
I think Mortal Kombat is totally contrary to what is going to make the Wii successful.
I'm not sure how it's going to play at all.
But beside that, it's Mortal Kombat. It's the thing that everyone that we want playing the Wii fears.
But it's secretly for kids. Mortal Kombat is for kids.
That's the game that Nintendo forced them to tone down when it was on cartridge. I mean,
yes.
Go back in history.
There was no blood in it, was
there? Yeah, they had, remember the Genesis version?
I mean,
version
a lot of adults play it, but kids think it's cool.
Yeah. It's a very odd thing. I mean, especially given the history, but...
It was like, I think it might have been a case of Midway being like, what do we got this big?
But, you know, I don't personally like, as someone who's looking forward to these $20 current-gen games coming to my new generation console. I think it kind of cheapens it and makes it seem lame. That's just me.
Because it's not going to be $20 on Wii.
Probably not. Well, maybe.
Of course
who knows?
Not.
You're
going to pay for the right to wave your arm like a retard.
Well, maybe it will. Those games are in line with current-gen games, right? The prices?
Well, and you sort of jumped ahead, and I just moved that. But, yeah, God damn it. Yeah, the actual...
We're being a disruptive influence on you.
You're being disruptive tech to the news flow. Wii games are currently slated to be priced in line with current-gen, and that's first-party, which is, $49.99 for a Nintendo game. As far as third-party... No one really knows yet. No one really knows that. Like, no one really knows how
right.
much
I mean,
Sony's
going
to
have a licensing fee series system in place. We don't know what it is, though.
Right.
Yeah.
So, to jump to the other platforms, talk about Sony, PS3 production is in full swing.
Woohoo!
Going to fill. And there hasn't been a lot. We talked about this, Shane, and I think Garnet and I talked about it, too, about how the Sony execs have been pretty quiet
Well,
lately.
We did say on this podcast, they should shut up because they're digging a hole and maybe they listened.
Well, I wish that they would come on. I wish they would...
Make life more interesting again.
Yeah, and make it... Come on, Ken. Keynote some shit, like TGS in a few weeks. Give me a sneak peek.
He's good at keynote TGS, right?
I'm thinking.
Absolutely. So, gloom and doom for PS3 as ever. Atari and SNK both have sort of come out and been like, yeah, PS3... Kind of way. And the SNK
thing... I have
thing,
a question. Does Atari still exist?
Do they have anything left?
Yeah.
Couldn't they sell or give away everything that they normally publish?
In other news, in the, Working
given
Designs
the list of,
and 3DO came out saying they're not so sure about Wii either. Just thought you should know.
Nothing planned from Atari
Dude.
Until 2007. And
Good.
In an interview with
Where's
Kotaku...
Where's the love for Victor?
In a Kotaku interview, SNK said that they weren't planning on producing for the PS3 until 2009, which...
That's when they can afford a dev kit?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Boom, boom, dum.
I don't know. God. Non-issue.
PS2 news, three more Guitar Hero 2 tracks were revealed. These are exciting, right? Really good songs. The Stone Temple Pilots, Tripping on a Hole in the
Paper
Heart.
That's a good song.
Can anyone even sing me that melody?
It's
I could hum some
it's
Plush.
It's a good song.
Yeah, but exactly. Where's Plush?
Or that song about leaving
Interstate
on a
love song,
southern,
definitely.
Yeah, Interstate Love Song.
That'd be better.
Wicked Garden.
Big Bang Baby.
Come on.
Anthrax is Madhouse.
I can kind of see Madhouse, but I would have liked I Am the Law.
Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil.
See, yeah, that's better. Motley Crue tracks.
Several.
Hey, why don't you guys boycott the game? Oh, no, wait, you are still going to buy it.
Yeah.
Wow.
What's your point? That we don't want better songs on it?
Sour Grapes.
We talk
Sour
about-
Grapes, because the songs aren't the ones we want. That's really sour.
You're not making the game.
I'm not.
No, you're not.
No.
In true form, Shane sort of shot his load early and hinted at the Wii pricing.
That's one of those younger guy problems.
Hasn't gone away from what I've heard. Sources have indicated.
Older guys have different problems. Don't take it on that. Your Cialis sees to that.
Gears of War Emergence Day was announced, and the first thing I want to jump to, because this whole announcement is a sea of problems.
You mean huge news coming this week on Gears of War?
God, let me get to it.
I thought Skip's announcement was better, actually.
The veins in my head are just pulsing. It's going to be $59.99 and $69.99 for the collector's tin with the Destroying Beauty book that we've all seen from a year ago, and a DVD of How the Game Was Made for $70, which is...
Is that the thing that was on MTV?
I think maybe.
Sure. If it is the MTV thing, worst collector's edition ever.
For $70?
For $70. And Cliffy B himself has bitched in the past about games getting too expensive. Cliffy B, the man, the myth, the legend. I think video game prices need to go down. $50 is far too much for an impulse buy. $60 is completely out of the question. Unless you're buying Gears of War, you dick.
Well, and the
fucking
issue,
hypocrite.
The issue, you might be used to paying $60 for 360 games, but
that
not
one of those really fast spoken, like.
The opinions expressed by Luke Smith are not necessarily those of the One Up Network.
Yeah, but that's
funny is when Cliffy comes on and kicks the shit out of
him. He will. Cliffy's he'll kick your ass. But no, but like.
I look forward
previously,
to
previously, Microsoft.
You know what? That's true. Cliffy, you should come on and hang out with us for a little while.
Cliffy and Mark both to come on and sit down and talk with us about this anytime.
Yeah, I mean, I bet they'd apologize. They're probably like, Microsoft made this pricing for us, but it is $10 more than every other first party Microsoft game.
I talked with Microsoft about it today, and they said that they were going to issue a formal statement because a lot of people were concerned about it. But in my understanding, it's a similar relationship to the relationship that Bizarre has with Microsoft, except Bizarre is actually part of Microsoft Game Studios, and Epic still has their independence, but it's being published as a first-party game, essentially. So there's probably some sort of semantic loophole that Microsoft can escape through to justify the pricing model for Gears. Like, hey, it's our Halo. Buy it. $60. $70 for the tin. And the real problem behind all of this isn't just the pricing. It's the way everything was presented. And Cliffy B and Mark Raine sort of had this like coy, flirtatious exchange on their message boards on the Gears forums last week. And Mark Raine hinted about this big announcement coming in the next week. What followed, in addition to a slew of news stories at 1UP, unfortunately, was this viral campaign that was launched that took place over Xbox Live Arcade with a user called M. Phoenix sending messages out, which is Marcus Phoenix, who's the protagonist from Gears of War. The viral scheme eventually led to a series of puzzles, which led to the November 12th release date, which we reported on day or so before the announcement. The problem with all of this was that in something being called a big announcement, the announcement ends up being a fucking Q4 November 12th release date. That's not a big announcement.
Well, the big announcement ends up being what's ostensibly a delay, because we had heard previously October.
Yeah.
Or even like late September, you know?
And it's one thing if it's developers not being able to finish the game on time. I don't want it to come out in November if it's not ready to go and is, you know, functioning 100% and is great. But this, like, a big announcement? You know what a big announcement would have been? Something other than a release date.
Were you able to speak to anyone at Epic or anything? Because the whole Emergence Day being a Sunday and the game actually coming out before
Mark Raine in a chat on, like, the Gears of War official chat room. He was explaining that, like, it's actually shipping the 7th to some retailers, and the 12th is just the day that all retailers will have it, and Microsoft is planning some big events to coincide with that.
So it'll end up hitting around November 9th, which...
Shock.
Yeah, November 9th, Halo 2 date, 2004.
No one expected that.
And I talked with Microsoft about it this week, excuse me. And they said that they were hoping for an earlier release because they wanted to have a separation between like that Halo sort of associated period for Microsoft and something else. And that's a big problem that I have with the way that Gears is being marketed, is in being marketed like a second Halo, which is, I think, foolish to begin with. They're sort of trying to create too many similarities between the two in terms of the way that they're going to present the game, like a small viral campaign. You know, the release date now is a big deal, and it
unlockable Master Chief.
No. Hopefully.
Well, but you know, if the game ends up being as good as everyone hopes it is, it could all work. This whole campaign could work.
And then, I mean, Microsoft is now putting it in November 12th head to head with PS3, which is. I mean, is that really where you want to put Gears of War?
It's their biggest gun, though, right?
We talked about
this. Isn't it their only
months
gun?
And months and months and months ago. Remember you called this very same thing right here. John said this on one of the podcasts like in February. That's what it's setting up to be. And it was, I mean, the writing was all over the wall. You knew when this was happening. It's not even worth announcing.
Would it have been a better move to have shipped Gears of War the last week of October, Emergence Day coinciding sort of with Halloween, and then give it 2 weeks to build some hype, to build some traction, and to come out against the That should have been a target, and if it wasn't a target, it should have been. But everything that I've seen, read, and heard indicates that it certainly was. So we are seeing
Why do you want a new IP game out there to try and stand up against a freaking juggernaut console?
Yeah, against
the most powerful brand name in the world.
If they marketed hard enough, you know, it can seem like an event. But
Did you just say they could market Gears hard enough to stand up to an entire console launch?
No, he said it could seem like an event.
If they pretend like it's Halo enough, we'll start to believe it.
It's too late to pretend like it's Halo.
But my question is,
a good point too.
Which other first-party Microsoft games are actually going to make it out this year? Too Human? I don't know.
I don't know.
Viva Pinata, probably.
Forza?
Forza will.
You think?
Well, they haven't shown any screenshots yet, but...
Leipzig's maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah, like, if Gears of War is all they got...
No, they won't do it at Leipzig. They'll do it at XO6.
Yeah.
Future Frenzy 2, that's a sure.
Oh, wow.
That's fantastic. Yeah,
I mean, fate sealed.
It's not all gloom and doom for Microsoft, though. Yeah. In the pages of EGM, it was unveiled that Castlevania Symphony of the Night is coming to Xbox
Fan
Live.
Fan favorite.
Yeah, fan favorite. Xbox Live Arcade.
I actually hinted at this a few weeks ago, and it's a really big deal.
Yeah. And it's coming Q1 2007. Konami told us that today. It's, just in case you're confused, it is the PS1 version of the game. It's not the Sega Saturn version.
Which had more stuff.
But it's also...
It's still awesome.
It's also not necessarily exclusive to the platform. So right. that we could see it on Virtual Console, on... PlayStation Network. What is it? PlayStation Network
platform.
GameTap.
GameTap is Konami just dumped a bunch of Castlevania games on GameTap in the last 2 weeks. Yeah. They dumped like four
GameTap's
games.
GameTap's getting really good.
And we're starting. I mean, we're start. So the idea now is that we're going to be seeing all of these games appearing on the same places.
Yeah.
Appear like your Xbox Live Arcade. How is it going to distinguish from PNP and from Virtual Console and from GameTap, and how are we expected to make this choice? What's going to dictate the choice?
Can you see where we're going with this?
Well, I can tell you how Live Arcade is going to answer is they're going to talk about the new development games that they have out there. Like, what was the one they did 2 weeks ago?
Castle Crashers, which is awesome.
No, the one that came out.
But is that exclusive?
The platform game.
Cloning Clyde.
But I think as a platform to nurture the indie community, I think
right.
Hopefully we'll see a lot more
but
of that.
But the indie community is not really a marketable thing, whereas the legacy of titles that Nintendo and Sony bring.
Yeah, the indie community can't stand the face of a $5 Super Mario Brothers 3.
Right. So if you're going to buy Castlevania,
sold a lot of copies.
Alien Hominid.
Right, but here's my question: if you're going to buy Castlevania Symphony of the Night, and it costs $10 or whatever, and are you going to buy it for Xbox Live? Are you going to buy it on on Wii? Are you going to buy it on PS3? If it's available for everything, where are you going to buy it?
So I think, I mean, making the assumption that all of the platform holders, and we include, I guess, GameTap as the sort of most viable PC, they do seem to be the one putting the most behind it. So you have four choices to build up your library of old games. Where are you going to do it?
And how are you going to decide?
Yeah,
more importantly, how are you going to decide? What's going to be...
I think we're more interested in the discussion of why.
Yeah, what's the deciding factor?
Like, for me, I would probably get more stuff on Wii just because I know there are a lot of NES and like.
But you know what? I'm thinking,
games
just to be purely practical, I'm thinking GameTap. Because the three consoles are somewhat transient, and the PC is going to be essentially the same no matter what they do to it. So I think there's, if you're going to drop $10 on a lot of old stuff because you want to build up a library, don't you want some permanence?
But the Wii controller being built the way it is, where you can just, you know, convert it to actually play those games the way they were intended to be played, that's big, right?
And
there.
There's the well,
that's
and there's the
me.
Regular, you know, yep. the regular.
So there's a potentially a very big discussion here that where the core of it is which one and why. But I think the why could expand into a pretty meaty conversation on right. the boards. So.
I mean, and people could also speculate, like, you know, who do you think is going to win the old game race? You know, well,
and how long is it going to be before one of these guys comes up with a subscription plan like GameTap, where you can actually mm-hmm. not have to buy the game per se, but you actually can buy a subscription?
Well, I think an interesting sort of offshoot of this conversation, maybe in the same thread, could be: could these sort of retro download strategies, could they be a contributing factor in which platform wins overall?
If it really takes off, if people start buying these new consoles, part of the reason that they can buy all these old games.
There's going to be, I mean, another thing we could be
And would that
at,
open the door for the Phantom?
Oh, God. And Garnet Lee derails the show again.
Yeah, completely shut down the conversation.
Another situation that we could potentially encounter is a whole new culture of watching the business of exclusives. If the business of exclusives extends to retro games.
Right.
Yeah. That's an entirely different, like, I've never even thought about that. Like, what if fucking Bionic Commando is exclusive for 6 months on PNP?
Or a game that was exclusive to a previous platform becomes an exclusive retro download on a competitor.
That's
how it looks right now. That's how it looks right now, though. That's
right.
Why it's such a great, like, that's why a Symphony of the Night acquisition for Microsoft is such a great thing.
That's a PlayStation
because
game.
It looks like a big win, especially when you have Kaz Harai going, Ridge Racer, and immediately when he showed that, I was thinking, like, okay, Final Fantasy VII, Symphony, and then what else?
Oh, my God. Can you imagine what would happen if 7 hit live?
I know.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, another thing related, in the new EGM.
I think Skip's
brain just melted. A little piece of it went...
Also, in the new EGM, we ran a rumor that we heard that Nintendo, like, their first-party games on Wii might come with virtual console games. Like, you buy Mario Galaxy, you get a Mario download. You buy Metroid, you get Super Metroid.
It should be. You buy Mario Galaxy, you get the NES and SNES library of Mario games.
They're not that nice, but I mean, that's something that Nintendo can leverage. They can be like, well, we have all these old games you love, and we're going to give them to you.
That would be awesome.
Like,
that's a great idea.
Dealing.
It is. It's exactly that. And one last thing I want to talk to you about 1UP News. A few weeks ago, probably like a month ago now, on my blog, I posted that we were looking for a couple of new additions to 1UP News. And we welcomed two new people this week, Susan Arendt and Mark Whitting, and Mark is someone that a lot of you will know from the message boards. Mark is beige.
So. Way to go, beige. Good job, dude.
I've sort of pranced around the office.
I saw a story by Mark Whitting and I wondered who it was.
I like pranced around the office this morning because it was so great having these
you
two.
Pranced?
He was.
Yeah.
He was.
These two
was
new. I was so
very,
stoked
very fancy
to have
pranced.
These great new people.
I thought
that was the earthquake.
They're both East Coast representation.
That's not very
like
nice.
I wake up in the morning and they've already sent a list of stuff that they're working on for the morning, and then it's just a matter of getting it up and edited. And they're both great. I'm really excited to have them.
Congratulations.
And excited to have them for free.
Welcome aboard.
And when you're not reading their news, you can read the rest of what they have to say on boards.1UP, of course, because beige always leading the charge there with all kinds of threads.
He's great on IM too.
Oh gosh, do they have a client that like goes long enough for him? Oh yeah, we should address that issue, shouldn't we? Yeah. So I was standing. I was actually standing outside in the
Skip
hall.
Just held up a note for anyone that was wondering.
Yeah. Well, I was standing out in the hall right before we came downstairs talking to Jeff Green because, as you guys have seen on the boards, actually, there's been a lot of backlash over the, you know.
I wouldn't call it backlash.
I would say concern.
There was concern right off the bat because a lot of people don't understand. So since John's here, I mean, John, from your experience and from the way you cut deals or the way these things are structured in the publishing world, what mm-hmm. exactly goes into a official magazine agreement?
In terms of what we discuss?
I mean, in terms of when you're making this relationship with a...
You should probably introduce that you're talking about the games.
Yeah, we're talking
games
about
for Windows
games. Here's what's going to happen. And you should probably, if you're really interested in this, I believe Jeff's going to talk about it on the CGW Radio podcast, which you can pick up at cgwradio.oneup.com. Bit of a plug there. We've not done much plugging today, have we? I should just say gamevideos.com as well, just as a real random thing.
Anything else you want to get in there?
So, not right now. Maybe I'll... So, we are relaunching Computer Gaming World as in partnership with Microsoft as the Games for Windows magazine. One of the concerns expressed has been about the name which I think is because Microsoft hasn't really gone out and explained what Games for Windows actually is. They're going to start positioning the PC platform and Windows as a platform, the way they position Xbox 360 as a platform. And you're going to see retail presence with demo pods and this Games for Windows brand that's going to have, I don't know if you've seen any of the material for Vista. It has this, like, they call it the Pearl. It's like a little blue transparent circle with the Windows flag in it, which is the, what the hell was that for?
This is Garnet being drunk.
I don't know.
Translating.
He's on his third beer.
Go ahead.
Skip wants the beep thing back. So, and you're distracting my flow, Garnet. Shut up.
Games for Windows is going to have launch titles, right?
Right. They're going to, I mean, they're going to treat it very much like a console, and we're going to see packaging changing, so all PC games are going to have Games for Windows on them. So as part of that initiative, we talked to them about, well, you know, if you're really serious about this, then a media partnership as well, whether, you know, it's to establish it like a platform. And they were very agreeable to that, and they're pretty progressive about the way they want to approach the media. I mean, they're, you know, it's written into the contract that the magazine and the Associated Media is completely independent. It's a branding agreement essentially, where we'll be doing stuff with them online and in print, and you know, we'll do stuff on 1UP and on Filefront and on game videos that all tied in with the magazine. The editorial team is staying the same. It's going to be the same mission. It's essentially the branding of it that's changing. Microsoft gets out of it is the cred of being able to sort of start to exert some ownership over the platform. You know, all games are for Windows. Some of the outcry has come from these sort of these Mac and Linux gamers who are saying they're never going to buy the magazine ever again. And I do wonder why they were buying it anyway, because I don't think they've talked about a game that doesn't run on Windows for about 6 years.
Linux games, nice idea. What was that, 5 years ago?
There are some. I mean, you know, there's
all the Atari ST gamers not buying it anymore.
No, or nor the Amiga gamers.
No.
I heard that the ColecoVision gamers aren't buying OPM.
So, I mean, it's, you know,
I think the concern that I was trying to address, which is the one that I see most frequently, is that, oh my gosh, you're going official. That means you're just going to be a shill for them. You're just going to sell out. And that's not what these things are about at all.
No. I mean, what do you shill? Like, you know, play games on PC using Windows. Okay. Well, and the first party, there's, you know, like I said, they don't exert any kind of influence over the choices or the cover choices or the... And the way that, if you've been reading CGW for the last few months, the way that they're handling reviews is very different now, in that the community voice is just as important. In fact, more important. Once a game is out, they want to reflect back what people are saying about it, and being able to return to online games again and again to see how the community is receiving it, and, you know, when patches are added and when things are done with. It's a great way to cover WoW, because you can hit it every month if something important is happening.
Cool.
Skip, what day does the CGW/Games for Windows podcast come out usually?
Mondays.
On Mondays. So listen up Monday for Jeff Green. He'll be talking about it in more depth.
Yep.
And, of course, you can hit it up on the boards. And until next week.
We didn't actually tell the kids what the question of the week was.
We did.
Did we?
We did.
We had this exact same situation last week.
What the deja vu?
Wow.
I think we just talked about it and never actually put it out there.
Oh, okay.
I like how he cut off my clothes.
I am awesome. Right, Garnett. You're old and senile.
Jesus. So, the question of the week, Garnett, what exactly is it?
Question of the week is, with all the different sources that are going to be out there for where downloadable classic games are going to be, which one are you going to most likely, in your mind right now, build your library on? And what's the determining factor of why you think you want to build it on that platform?
Very well said.
I'm very impressed, considering how poorly you hold your liquor.
Oh. I hold my liquor fine. The roles we play on the show are simply that, eh?
On that note, I don't play roles.
On that
I don't
note,
RP.
You ready to go until next week? You want to get any last shot?
I'm done.
You're done?
You sure?
You're done?
Yeah.
You're done?
Done?
We're gone.
This has been 1UP Yours, a production of the Sif Davis Game Group and part of the 1UP Radio Network. 1UP Yours is hosted by Garnet Lee and John Davison, produced by Andrew Fisker and Mike Ng, and is published every Friday afternoon at podcast.1UP.com and at the iTunes Music Store.
What's up? I'm not in the fucking credits.